Hal, who is empty but not dumb, theorizes privately that what passes for hip, cynical transcendence of sentiment is really some kind of fear of being really human. Since to be really true, really human, at least as he conceptualizes, is probably to be unavoidably sentimental and naive and goo-prone and generally pathetic, is to be some basic interior way forever infantile. One of the really American things about Hal, probably, is the way he despises what it is he really is lonely for, this hideous internal self, incontinent and sentimental and need, that pulses and writhes just under the hip, empty mask. Anhedonia.
Good morning. Great to be with you guys this morning. So our topic this semester is, what did you learn this summer? And I'm proud to say, this summer, after 36 years on this earth, I learned about good hygiene. But obviously, I'm employing a rhetorical flourish to get your attention. I'm not talking about showering and brushing your teeth. I'm talking about what I call emotional hygiene. And so I think what I mean by emotional hygiene is a daily awareness and maintenance of our emotional health, similar to the way we shower and brush our teeth on a regular basis, giving that same sort of consistent, brief attention to how we're feeling, so that things don't get sort of gunked up and crusty. So I'm actually going to kick things off with a little movie clip, which I think might be a first for Tuesdays in the Chapel. Okay, so I'll set up this clip while I'm setting this up. This is from the movie Inside Out, and most of this movie takes place inside the mind of an 11-year-old girl named Riley. And so the main characters in this movie are actually Riley's emotions. And we're going to see them trying to cope with Riley starting a new school in a new city.
Hello, did I wake you?
You have to play.
Well, I'm in practice, and I don't think of it as playing so much as hugging. Okay, first day of school, very, very exciting. I was up late last night figuring out a new plan. Here it is. I need a list of all the possible negative outcomes on the first day at a new school.
Way ahead of you there.
Does anyone know how to spell meteor?
Disgust. Make sure Riley stands out today, but also blends in. When I'm through, Riley will look so good, the other kids will look at their own outfits and barf.
Joy. Yes, Joy?
You'll be in charge of the console, keeping Riley happy all day long. And man, I love your dress. It's adorable. Oh, this old thing? Thank you so much. I love the way it grows. Train of thought. Right on schedule. Anger. Unload the daydreams. I ordered extra in case things get slow in class.
Might come in handy if this new school is full of boring, useless classes, which it probably will be.
Oh, sadness. I have a super important job just for you.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Follow me.
What are you doing?
In there. This is the circle of sadness. Your job is to make sure that all the sadness stays inside of it.
So, you want me to just stand here?
Hey, it's not my place to tell you how to do your job. Just make sure that all the sadness stays in the circle. See? You're a pro at this. Isn't this fun?
No.
All right, everyone. Fresh start. We are going to have a good day, which will turn into a good week, which will turn into a good year, which turns into a good life.
Okay. So, the quiet item of your laptop is officially accepting donations. So without spoiling the movie, let's just say that Joy's plan for a good day doesn't exactly work out. And I think it goes wrong because things veer off the path of good emotional hygiene. And good emotional hygiene is not about filtering out unpleasant emotions. Rather, it's about giving space to all of them, because each one serves a unique and important purpose. And perhaps sadness, in particular, has a crucial and unexpected role to play, as the movie shows. And we'll come back to the movie in just a moment. Good emotional hygiene starts with emotional literacy, which I learned just boils down to answering the question, what am I feeling right now in this moment? And this can actually be a surprisingly slippery and uncomfortable question to answer, especially for those of us who like to stay in a strictly rational space like myself. As a kid, I used to love watching episodes of the old original Star Trek. But I couldn't really relate to the impassioned and overdramatic ways of the debonair Captain Kirk. But Mr. Spock, on the other hand, now there's my kind of guy. Tall and skinny, calm, emotionless, way smarter than everybody else, a rock star scientist, and most importantly, always unceasingly logical. In one episode, Spock says, "I have not thoroughly enjoyed serving with humans. I find their illogic and foolish emotions a constant irritant." So sadly, Spock has not been such a good mentor in this particular area. But fortunately, I have grown out of thinking that emotions are an irritant, a hindrance. Emotional Literacy 101 says that there are five basic feelings that determine our emotional state. And they're actually pretty easy to remember. Glad, sad, mad, afraid, and ashamed, just like we saw in the clip. And I think the idea is that at any given time, we're actually feeling all of those. It's just a question of what the mix is, of which ones are most prominent. So there's a simple exercise I can do where I take a quick inventory of my emotions, and I see which feeling is on top. And I give some space to that emotion, and I see where it's coming from and what it's telling me. And then I move to the next one that's on top, and so on down the line. And so I remember a really illuminating moment last spring when I was telling a small group of students about these five basic emotions. One student said wistfully, "Huh, four out of the five emotions are negative." And I wonder what you think about that. Because I knew exactly what he meant right away. And it sort of got me thinking, because I think a lot of us have this same sort of unconscious bias against what seem like negative emotions. And much like we saw in the clip with an emotion like sadness, for instance, we want to keep it as minimized and as contained as possible. Totally natural, understandable response. But what does it cost us to marginalize some of our emotions in that way? And I think it might actually cost us a lot. And I know for me, as I've come to learn about this stuff, I've learned that it's cost me a lot. So let me give you a current example. I've recently noticed that there are a few unhealthy patterns in my relationship with my 4-year-old daughter. So when we butt heads, we have this dynamic of each stubbornly digging in our heels and refusing to let go of our agenda. It usually ends in tears. And I found myself becoming really angry really quickly in these scenarios. And each successive time it happens, it seems to happen faster and the pattern becomes more entrenched. Now, parenting is obviously filled with plenty of challenging and frustrating moments. But even so, I've noticed that my internal anger response has been beyond what's warranted in the moment. So I'm still very much an emotional hygiene noob, but here's how I'm trying to apply what I'm learning. After an incident where I feel triggered into this very angry state, I try to take a few minutes to go through one of these emotional inventories. The emotion on top is obviously anger. But I take some time to explore where that anger is coming from specifically. And, you know, it goes something like this. I'm angry about not feeling like I'm in control of this situation. I'm angry that I don't feel respected by my daughter. I'm angry about not getting my way, frankly. And once I've spent some time with the anger, I look to see what emotion is beneath that. And I discover in this case, it's sadness. I feel sadness over the hurt that I'm causing my daughter, that I'm probably causing her to feel rejected. I feel sadness about not knowing how to handle the situation in a better, less painful way. I feel sadness that strife in relationships is a part of life. In this process, I realize that I've become emotionally constipated. Now, I'm mixing my metaphors here, but maybe you catch my drift. Subconsciously, I don't want to go anywhere near that sadness. It's too unpleasant. And so I keep it bottled up under a protective layer of anger. But if I can allow myself to engage with that sadness, I'm empowered to feel it and then to let go and move on. And in my experience is that while sadness is not pleasant, it actually leads to me feeling free and joyful. So if I have one practical encouragement to share with you this morning, it's to see the movie Inside Out. But one thing after that would be to let yourself feel sadness if you need to. But if you're like me, you're not exactly pulling out your calendar right now to see when you can schedule a good cry. And that's okay. Today I'm more focusing on day-to-day emotional hygiene. And the cry your eyes out session is perhaps more like getting a cavity in your tooth filled. It's maybe not as frequent and hopefully not as necessary if you brush your teeth every day. So good sadness hygiene is about paying attention and giving space to all the little sadnesses, the little things that I need to let go of in my normal day-to-day. And I've noticed that there are a ton of ways that this comes up. Just a few examples. I get nervous and I say something awkward in a conversation with someone and I feel like an idiot. I have a stressful traffic encounter with another driver or pedestrian where dirty looks and maybe the occasional hand gesture are exchanged. And I think actually any situation where I feel like someone is judging me. So what does this look like, engaging with these little sadnesses? Okay, so this is going to sound like really silly and childish, but this has helped me, so it's the word ow, like what you say when you stub your toe or get a paper cut. Ow. Now, obviously, you don't have to say it out loud. This can be an internal thing, but it might go something like, ugh, this person is definitely judging me for what I just said. Ow. I don't like the way that feels. Ow. Now, I'm not always present enough to my emotions to pull this off. And oftentimes when I feel judged, I just get defensive and judge right back with a vengeance. But I've learned that that doesn't actually do anything productive. And it eventually leads to emotional BO. Something else I've noticed is that our need to feel sadness when it happens and what provokes it doesn't always make sense. And this actually reminds me of one moment from the life of Jesus. It's a moment that's always fascinated and perplexed me. It's a story where Jesus' friend Lazarus dies. And several days later, Jesus raises him back to life. Jesus gets to Lazarus' hometown knowing that he's already dead. He sees Lazarus' sisters, and then he starts to head over to Lazarus' tomb so he can resurrect him, which he's already said that he's going to do. But then he stops. He stops and weeps. He cries openly, publicly, without shame. And this has always felt so strange to me. Jesus does this 2 minutes before bringing Lazarus back to life. And he knows that he's about to bring him back. Why doesn't he just keep things in check for a moment longer? Why does he even need to cry at all? But he doesn't hold back. He does not restrain the emotion. And I'm winding up here, so I'm not about to get into any theology about Jesus. All that aside, I think this is a powerful image of true emotional health. Jesus isn't in tears all that often, but he shows us that this is at least part of what it looks like to be fully alive, fully integrated, and fully human. So here's hoping that emotional hygiene can help you to live long and prosper.